Good afternoon and welcome everybody. This is Tevo Creative Leadership and we're going to be discussing music, the involvement of music, creativity, and we're going to be talking with Travis. Travis has a lot of knowledge and information experience with the jazz, and we're going to talk on jazz, much worship, much music today, that extemporaneous, spontaneous side, whether it's secular or not, African influential or not, is a lot of it goes back to way far ago, you know, long ago in the United States and around the world, of the jazz greats, even Louis Armstrong on up. So I've just asked Travis to say hello and he can sort of start and lead where we want to be today. What are we going to focus on?
I think we had agreed that we would probably just try to apply the ideas of the evolution of creativity in music and how those ideas can maybe transcend space and time into other fields.
Love it. All right. So we've got some names we want to discuss, and that would be John Coltrane, the saxophonist, who is a huge influence, and Travis was going to fill me in on his history, his roots, as well as his how it builds to today. The way I deal with music is I'm an inventor type. I like to hear a culture and take from the culture or have my own get inspired by it. And I know many people throughout the world and America have been influenced all ages by the greats of these older time periods.
Yeah, I think Coltrane is probably the biggest saxophone influence of the 20th century. And he's kind of situated in the middle of the century. He was born, I want to say it was 1926 in High Point, North Carolina. He went to school for music. He played in the Navy band, World War II, I believe it was. But after that, he goes on the road, plays in Dizzy Gillespie's band, which is enormous for him because Diz and Charlie Parker are kind of the founders of the bebop movement. And you know, he's really able to stretch out and kind of learn from Dizzy not only how to play the music, but he's also trying to learn how to be a professional. Things don't go as well as they could have because Coltrane was young and he had some other things going on, let's just say. But after he matured, he starts to really get control of his, if I may be so bold, inner demons. And he really begins to concentrate and focus on music. Particularly as he starts to work with Miles Davis. You know, he's a part of that first great quintet or sextet that it would become that Miles had. And you really start to see him hone in on certain ideas. You start to see like the sharpening of a craft at a rapid rate. So the question becomes, you know, is this something that is personal to him, or is this something that happens with all creators? I personally think it happens with everyone at some point. It just depends on your stage of development. Where he was, he's on this rapid rise because he's around all these great minds.
Yes, that's it.
He's in New York City, which at the time, once again, you have a community of learners and all the jazz players there, and everybody's doing different things, and he's going out and seeing other people, listening to other people. He's got a great mentor in Miles, and he starts to try some very interesting ideas. Obviously, he has to work on this. It doesn't come overnight. So there's all these stories of him just practicing. Like his buddies would come and try to see him, and they may sit there for an hour, and Coltrane wouldn't speak to him because he's practicing. So he'd be in the corner practicing, and his buddy is sitting on the couch. Hey, if I'm in the zone and I'm working, I'm creating, then I'm going to be devoted to that, which in the creative process I think one of the things you have to have is a devoted time of the day, whether it's morning, noon, night, 2 hours, 3 hours, or you break it up into hour increments, that it's undisturbed study and learning. So there's a second point that, you know, and that applies to people that paint or people that run hedge funds. Whatever it is that you do, you need uninterrupted, 100% quality time concentrating. And Coltrane was a master of that.
Yeah. He had the inner gift to do that and not be pressured with his friends there. You know, he had that focus, the main.
He did have a very serious focus. After he, I'm going to say, got away from his personal demons, he really devoted his life in spirit to God, trying to get closer to God and using music to do it. But you start to see him musically evolve by 59. He comes across the idea of key centers moving in thirds, which I know we're getting into the weeds of like music theory, but it hadn't really been done to that degree, that blatant before. Long story short, you're using that, ideas of bebop from Dizzy's band that he was in, other recordings that he'd heard, and all this stuff starts to intersect at the very time he's on his rise.
Yeah.
And he's devoting his life, I'm going to get closer to God through music.
Cool.
All this to say, at one point he's making music that has harmonic sophistication to the level of Charlie Parker and beyond. And then there comes a point where he strips down his harmonic writing process, and he starts to work on, hey, what if we just use one chord instead of going through 12 key centers with 2-5-1, one chord? What kind of ideas can I get out of that? And so then it's like he pulls this emergency brake on his creative process and goes in a completely different direction.
Yeah, yeah.
All this to say, one of the other things you have to have, it seems to be, if you're going to learn on your own, is the ability to self-correct, to know, not necessarily when you're wrong, but when you need to make a change for you in your learning process, instead of just hitting your head against the same wall. And sure enough, he makes a distinct turn and starts, and you get to see that with the music of My Favorite Things, which he's famous for doing. But if you look at the evolution of just that one song, he begins to add on sections to a song that weren't originally written there as a way for him to stretch out. But it's only on one chord. And that will go sometimes 8, 12, 16, 24 bars on one chord. And this is Coltrane, who had, like I said, reached pretty heavily into the harmonic sophistication of something, only to pull this emergency brake and go in a different direction and say, instead of dealing with strictly harmony, I'm going to deal with melodies now. Quote unquote self-correcting, or the ability to go, or the ability to say to oneself, I've gone as far down this road as I can go for right now. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm done, but I need to do something else. And I think in the creative process, sometimes people, they either get lazy, they get scared because they can't get out of their own comfort zone, and they don't change direction because they feel like maybe they'll lose popularity, or they'll, hey, I've worked so long to get this far, if I put it down, I may never get it back, which is kind of a micro view of one's art form. You know, he's, yes, Coltrane played the saxophone, but what is he really trying to do? He's trying to get closer to God through music. However that has to happen, after you start to see the evolution of My Favorite Things and that, and his albums begin to take on a different sound, and it's the sound of world music. So now he's going from American jazz, blues, swing, bebop, hard bop. he has incorporated, he has digested all those forms, and he's looking for something else. So he begins to reach outside the U.S. to Africa, and he starts to incorporate those ideas, different rhythms, different scales, particularly five-note scales. Instead of dealing with the 7 or 12 tones that Western music tends to devote itself to, he starts to devote himself to five-note scales and moving this pentatonic scale from place to place. And he goes, I know I'm waxing poetic here, but to get to the point, he goes so far, so fast, that his last album or two, I can't listen to, because I'm not developed enough, because he's in a whole other world. The rhythms become so complex, and some of the songs, if you read some of the books about Coltrane, there's no, for lack of a better word, there's no like sheet music.
Yes,
it's just some, it's just melodic ideas and people looking and listening at each other, and they're playing whatever is coming out of their heart and soul, and then they're playing off of that. So there's nothing, there's no physical reference point. It becomes an aural and a spiritual reference point with the idea of trying to get closer to God. You know, how does one go that far that fast? His creative process led him on that route, and it seems like anyone that is trying to get good at whatever their craft is, they tend to maybe take the same path.
Well, when you're discussing this, it is similar to people who don't have all the vocabulary and teaching, which is good for people who do, because people have that too, where you know all the intricate natural music that is printed out or you could be replicated. So that is quality that he has that too. You know, he lived that way. But when I'm taking for the culture that has just gotten it, but does that, the Holy Spirit crowd, basically, they get into the large worship where they, excuse me, it's like jazz. They depart from, they get into the creative mode, spontaneous mode, and the Holy Spirit, yoke-breaking, you know, all these things. You haven't practiced. You've gotten skilled and practiced to a point, but then in certain groups, not many of them, but there are many groups that can go, and it isn't labor to go there. You're capturing what happens with physical, natural, practical, great education. Many people don't have that. I mean, it's the same, but I'm seeing it from the spiritual, emotional, you know, like the point of view of departure from what you had before. You couldn't have imagined it. You know, God says, eyes not seen what he's prepared for those who love him. It is past your brain into the spirit, you know. And there is a culture of that within certain parts of the Christian ministry. And I love that part because I deal with that. I, you know, you go into the tone or the flow and get brave. You have to be brave. But he had the natural and the spiritual side, it sounds like. So you're mentioning all the different parts of scales and everything, which is so true. But I don't have, you know, that has been not been my field. Mine is how the Lord moves in music, and some of it touches people, heals them, you know, gives them a touch, and so does jazz. So jazz is part of the background, because many people who are in worship or Christian music come from other fields before that. Some of them are really prone to the jazz. They'll have jazz saxophone as well, because it's the touch. You know, David, the King David, would play for the oppressed King Saul, and he would get all, you know, mean and dysfunctional. He would call and he said, bring me the minstrel, bring me the musician, and that would lift his stress and lift his pallor or whatever he had. So I like it. I relate it to that, you know, translating it from sort of all the realms that you know, the educational realm, which is quality. So that's cool. So when we look at the heritage of John Coltrane, and you mentioned an album that people listen to and try, you know, to hear that, it's Stranger Things, what was it?
My Favorite Things.
My Favorite Things. And you would say about that music, what would you look for in that? Or how would you describe that as a big deal?
Yeah. Well, the album in and of itself, I mean, is obviously great only because of the music that's on it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't know anything else about Coltrane, like that album, you can just listen to that and go, wow.
Yeah.
But when you start to look at it as a step in a process, there are other recordings of My Favorite Things that are out there. their live recordings. And they all occurred after this album came out. So on the album, you hear a very, how am I going to put this? It's a very studio done version of My Favorite Things. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, anybody that could create that is great already. But when you start to listen to that song as a step in an evolutionary process, as a creative process, you can listen to other recordings that come later, and then you start to go, oh, we're at the end of the song form, and they're just playing on one chord. That wasn't here before.
Yeah.
Why is it here now? What is he doing? Or maybe it's not what he's doing. What's his goal? What is he striving to do? And then you hear another version that maybe comes out a year or two later.
That's the kind of music I like, because you don't know what's going to happen all the time. It's not a formula. It's not a script. It's the live, whatever's going to happen, place.
Yeah,
that's
very much, those live recordings are great because you hear this person trying to incorporate all the study and the devotion of trying to get closer to God. And every night, this individual who has worked on his craft his whole life, he doesn't do anything else except play music, and he is in constant pursuance of a higher consciousness through this vehicle of music. The saxophone is just an instrument he happens to play, but he plays it. He is music. That's what he's doing. So he begins to really stretch out and starts to play these strange, what mere mortals we would call strange ideas. I've never heard this before. No one's done it like this. And the next thing you know, like the actual song, as you listen to further down the line versions, it gets longer and longer. And at one point, I think there's a recording out there that's 55 minutes long.
It gets going in it.
And they don't take, like, they're playing this one song.
No, I understand.
And what they're doing is they're reaching as deep as they can into this creative process to express themselves, or if you're taking the, for lack of a better word, like a gospel route. You know, the whole point of gospel music is, you know, I'm not trying to hear you.
Yeah.
I want to hear God
in it.
Through
it's,
you.
That's exactly
right. Hey, I don't need you to show me how good you are.
Exactly.
I need you to show me
exactly the presence, the peace, the power, whatever of God. That's what he was looking for. That's what I go for, not the pretty or whatever. I want to hear it in my spirit.
Yeah.
If you look at the analogy to rock music, the natural rock that plays like the 70s, you know, classic rock, they'll go on in their riffs, they'll get into the jam mode, they'll get into that and it take off. And some are really great quality, some are not. So people do that in church too at certain times, special, you know, conferences and stuff, which I love, that realm that is past the notes. It's the spiritual effect, you know, the God part. It could be humans, of course, but it could be errors in there, but it's not perfect, but you get a taste, a glimpse of it. And that's what he's, the divine, I guess you'd call it the divine, is what he was sensing, you know, because it's a sensing thing. You can think about it, but unless you are touched by it, that's the part I love about, you know, music and rock worship and any kind. So his was, I guess you'd say, extemporaneous, as well as, I would say, Holy Spirit, or just it evolved from being more caged, cooped up with natural, you know, experience. But all these people you said influenced him, such as Louis Armstrong on down. Talk about the people that were, you know, how would that build to today? How would that build from what we have going in different sectors and genres, you think?
So what I was mentioning earlier about John Coltrane kind of being situated in roughly the middle of the 20th century is
for our listener, he died in 67, so he was effective in this about the 40s, 30s.
His Coltrane's heyday is really from 1955 until 67. Those 12 years, he's on a meteoric rise that most people don't experience in a lifetime of doing this, of being a part of a creative process.
Yeah.
When I say doing this,
yeah.
Trying to come to terms with whatever your calling is, he does it on a high level in a very short amount of time. Because he's, by the time he's 40, 41, he's passed away. I think it was liver cancer. But all this to say, like, from the time he really starts to devote himself and he is in pursuance of his craft and his goal, he's just unstoppable in a very small amount of time. But he's situated, he's kind of couched in the middle of, if you want to talk about the beginnings of jazz being blues and basically African music brought over through the slave trade, you have a meeting that goes on that's very unique in America. You have a group of people who are brought here against their will.
Yeah.
And they not only bring their person, but they bring their culture with them.
Yes.
They bring their taste for food, their interactions with others, but also the love of music and of sound and of art. And you have African music that's brought to the United States. That one culture, how am I going to put this? It kind of collides. That would be the word I would use. It kind of collides with a European culture and its music. And then from there, you start to have also a group of people that is in bondage. You know, how is it that I'm going to deal with this life that I've been handed, that I've been forced into, and I see tragedy and catastrophe all around? You know, how do I express my weariness or my tiredness, my anger, love, hatred, all those emotions? Because there's no mental health back then.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no real care for these people. So they have to take care of themselves through art. So blues, I think it was Cornel West said, blues is the is any kind of catastrophe expressed lyrically or through melody. It's a wailing, not crying, but a wailing is the way Dr. West kind of phrased it. And so these people are trying to come to terms with life, and they're trying to alleviate a burden on their soul so they can keep moving forward.
They have the power and the strength and, you know, courage.
So in New Orleans, there was a place called Congo Square. And I think it was Sunday afternoons, slaves were permitted to get together and make music. But they're slaves from all over West Africa. They could be from different nations, different tribes, at different times. So now you have a meeting of different cultures in an institution of slavery. And they're trading all these musical ideas. And once again, there's still that collision with white European religious music.
I would think that.
And they start to, like, this art form starts to, if I may be so bold, like, coalesce. I think the first jazz musician recognized is Buddy Bolden. There's no recordings of Buddy Bolden, as far as I know. There's maybe one or two pictures of him, but Bolden was watched and he was heard by many in New Orleans, particularly Louis Armstrong and King Oliver. And from there, once again, these guys are passing these ideas amongst each other, variations on a theme. And then Armstrong, he's kind of the first superstar of jazz and stays that way for 50 years after the fact. And Armstrong's ideas, he takes them as far as he can go, as he should, did, frankly, an awesome job. But other people heard his ideas and said, well, what if instead of doing this, we did this. Or what if we change this chord?
Yeah.
Or what if we, he did this and he's singing it like this. Wait, he's only playing one note. Can I play that one note like that and be as cool? No? Okay, I need to find something else to do. And now he's moving. Next thing you know, people start to play with harmony. The harmony gets really sophisticated. By the time Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker come along, when you look at their music, like the Louis Armstrong harmony of like one chord each measure has now become two chords per measure, sometimes four chords in a measure, one every beat. And Parker and Gillespie are playing faster, or they're playing slower than ever, like extremes of speed and slow, like artistic expression begins to really come out in how they're stretching this art form. Coltrane, by the time he gets into Dizzy's band, he's doing this in Dizzy's big band. He kind of obviously picks up those ideas. He absorbs those ideas. And Coltrane sets about doing the same thing. How can I get closer to my goal? Get better at my craft, at my calling.
As they say in modern terms, they're making it their own.
They're making it their own.
Yeah.
But it's really this evolution of creativity.
It is.
And Coltrane has it at such a fine point. He rises so far, so fast. Like I said, those last two or three albums, I listened to them and I listened to them again and again. And 25 years after I first heard it, I wish I knew what he was doing. I just don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, the people at that time, they hear Coltrane, and his ideas are just unbelievable. For the amount of expression and the way you can manipulate music to try to get closer to whatever your goal is.
Yeah, yeah.
So people begin to emulate him a lot. Obviously, people listen to his recordings. They see him live when they can, or they talk to other people. The people that want to be like him, they find who played with Coltrane, like Elvin Jones.
Wow.
You know, hey, I want to play with Elvin Jones, if for no other reason, because he played with Coltrane for so long. Whatever that is, I want to pick up on that. Whatever that energy is flowing with Mr. Jones, you know, Jimmy Garrison and McCoy Tyner, those guys that were in, and what you start to see is the same thing that normally happens, with people on a creative journey, and that is they begin to associate themselves with people that were near innovators, which leads us to, obviously, the rise of Michael Brecker in the 60s and 70s, and Joe Lovano, and those guys carried the Coltrane torch until they broke out of that mold, and Brecker had his own sound. And that, you know, because when you hear Brecker, you can go, oh, that's Michael Brecker, 100%. I know that. But I also hear, you know, if you peel back a couple things or you hear certain recordings, you're like, hey, that's a variation on a Coltrane line that came out of that album. Or, hey, that's a Parker line, but it's been manipulated like as if Coltrane would do it. And now, Brecker passed, it was January of 2007, he passed away.
Okay.
And obviously people listened to Brecker. People emulated Brecker to the point that people were buying the same saxophone, people emulated his sound, and now there's a whole other group of guys and girls that are playing like Brecker until they break out. And all that to say, Coltrane's been dead, we're getting on to 60 years now, so it's about the halfway-ish point in the history of jazz. But his influence is still felt today. Very important in the creative process. And I think the ideas that helped him have such a quick rise and get him closer to his goal can be lifted and used in I think any field.
Yep.
That's it.
The ability to really self-correct, to raise your head from time to time and see, am I on the path I want to be on?
Good point. Yes.
Also, you know, the devotion to working or studying every day, uninterrupted. I don't care who comes over. Now, granted, you're going to have to sacrifice, but he was willing to do that. And to not be afraid of where the path may take him, because he has faith. Because I feel confident when he was starting to move into that music that led to albums like Interstellar. There was another one, Ascension. You know, those ideas on those albums are not easy to grasp for the listener. It demands work on the part of the listener. You know, was he afraid that his devotees or listeners would abandon him? I mean, that had to cross his mind.
Because it is a commercial. You have to live and eat.
Well, and not only that, you know, would he be abandoned by the community?
Yeah, because he'd already made his mark.
And, you know, like, why are you going so far, quote, away? I want to put that in quotes. Why are you going away from what this art form has been? But he's in pursuance of a mission of craft, but also, frankly, I don't even know if it's a goal. It was his calling.
Everyone has a creative field, but they have a revelation field of their. They know what we don't know, and they will have maybe inner vision because they're special. You know, he has a special side that he saw things that we could not see. You know, so he said it in music, and many people are like that. I come from the guitar. You know, back in the day, they're building on the famous greats and all. I was in near Austin and all the all the stuff in Texas and a lot of that. And then had a family member move to Brooklyn and right around before COVID, and they were up in the environment with all the people coming to a certain creative spot. So he was in, John Coltrane happened to be, you know, God placed in God's grace. He was born where he could go to a culture that he could be make a mark on, but also he was affected by the ones before him, and he left it on. So that's really for any, you know, if anybody could, by God's grace and mercy, can find that culture today that's safe for them to let them be, whether it's teaching or, you know, making creative ideas, but also the work, the music or worship music, writing. So I love that because it's an ongoing thing. People will come and surface that are this quality. You know, it'll be a mystery in a way why they're like that. But we can all learn and then respect the ones that are like, you know, that come up.
Oh, absolutely. And you can tell, like, his love and his admiration of those who came before him is always present in his music, even when he's going directly against the grain of what one of the innovators of the past might have advised.
Yeah.
He was willing to go against that grain with the love and the idea of, I'm not disrespecting anyone. I want to see what's out here.
Yeah.
And is it pragmatic? Is it possible for us to use this for self-expression of love or the wailing inside?
Yeah.
Can we heal anyone with this? Or, hey, could it just make this particular song sounds so great that it fills the audience with an aural ecstasy almost, because people are coming to this show.
That's why they want it.
And they
want to
be
lifted.
Fill
that whatever touch or void or whatever the distance from their pain or their normal. Yeah.
But I think, you know, everyone that gets good at something, at some point, you have to acknowledge those that came before. You know, some people call it the ancestors. Some people call it the historical figures, your parents. I call them mountains. You know, there's always, you know, there are, I think it's a Haitian proverb, there are mountains beyond mountains. But, you know, some people stand so tall that as you're traveling this world, you think what's behind you is a mountain. And then you get to the top of another mountain, you go, oh, that's not a mountain. That's that's my parents, you know, or I'm up here on this mountain and you look down and you're not on a mountain. You're on the shoulders of someone else.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You're on the shoulder. One of the things I noticed in culture is, hate to say it, deep ingratitude right now and deep disrespect, because they've owned it so long with media comments and celebrity, you know, all the things that are making it fancy out there. But I have to think, I could not be here today and if I had not had good parenting, good teaching, good people that were not my parents, that were, you know, well behaved and respect, gave me a hero glimpse. So I cannot forget that. And when I think of some people that are just really, you know, lambasting public figures in certain kinds, I think, listen, there for the grace of God go we, but we're standing on their shoulders.
Oh, absolutely.
I've always said, the Bible, you know, the Bible says in the commandments, God says, honor your mother and father, and it will go well with you. Your days will be longer. That can apply in not just your natural, but the cult, you know, the figures that have influenced you and the other movements and, you know, this type of thing.
Absolutely.
So I really like that. Also like the fact that you brought out the culture that was not just Western European today. I love to do that, because that is a of what we have in music today in our society. The fact that you were talking of the people from the West Indian slaves getting together, I didn't know. I loved it. I've always had a DNA, I think I have a natural DNA for all colors. I'm a very diverse person, and that is why I honor the fathers and mothers of all the races, of all the nations, because we are a collective gathering, you know, if people can make that out, that we have so much more than meets the eye, that nobody knew at all, but all these people that we are honoring, you know, that we celebrate their name, they went through much more than we knew, like he did, you know. It's suffering, and what were you saying, the phrase, and you say, they were letting out their wail.
Right. Once again, it's not a crying.
It's inner pain. Yes.
You're trying to process emotionally, mentally, and at some level, spiritually. You're trying to process what's happening to you, but most importantly, what's happening to your loved ones around you. Because you care about them more than you, you know, how do you come to grips with that? Like, even now, you know, there's therapists out there, but not everybody can afford that, or they're not great, or frankly, they're not what's needed. There needs to be another way to cope.
Yeah.
Besides alcohol, drugs.
Exactly. Why not?
And self-destruction, which is where art comes in. Your art has the ability, if one studies it, allows it to, you know, it can allow you to cope with a deep amount of pain for a long amount of time.
Was it endorphins or something? There's something that's beyond the vocabulary that it does affect. It's the mind, will, and emotion. It's that soft spot of the ethereal or whatever that is so needed. Well, because we're hearing all the rattling and shaking in the background up here, how would we sum up this, and what would you tell people, you know, what do we want to go to in our closing here?
I think the idea is to find ways to lift ideas in the pursuit of a creative process from whatever field you choose. Whether it's, I think probably the big book on it here recently, I think it came out in 98, was the Robert Greene, 48 Laws of Power. It demonstrated well there. There's, you know, he goes over a lot of innovators in their fields.
Say that again, I'm going to write down and put it on our little...
Robert Greene. I'm pretty certain he has an E on his last name.
Okay, what was it called?
The 48 Laws of Power. He has another book called Mastery as well. But he's talking about what does it take for a person or persons to pursue ideas or to try to chase down their craft and become good at something or proficient at something. You don't even have to be the best. You could just be very proficient at what you do. and there's plenty of examples musically or whatever the case may be.
You can have a human side that you help people and develop a culture or something that, you know,
right.
There's a lot of ways of having that expression
right.
and helping.
And really trying to find whatever your place is. Not everyone's going to be a Coltrane, nor should they be.
Yes.
We cannot have that. I frankly think the world would burst if we did have that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But in whatever amount of life you have, everybody wants to try to get better at either art or communication,
yeah.
money management, getting closer to God. You know, how do I better my marriage? How do I better my parenting skills
yeah, yeah.
with my children? How do I deal with me?
Exactly.
Whatever your pursuit is, to look at someone else, hearkening to the past, whether it's your mother, your father, or those people that have been innovators.
Yeah, exactly.
What did they do? What obstacles did they face? How did they solve problems? And most importantly, what are the elements of their process that they either did purposefully or by accident that led them to make decisions? Can you incorporate that to better yourself? If you can lift those ideas from the past, I think that's worth more than any 4-year degree. I think it's worth the labor of the reading of the failures that you're going to have in the process, because it's going to take time. But the idea is that nothing easy comes quickly, so this is going to be a journey. That journey for you might be as fast as Coltrane, 12 years and boom,
yeah, yeah.
You're off this earth. Or you could be as lucky as, Pablo Picasso lived till he was, 95?
Something up there.
I mean, the great American composer Elliot Carter, he lived till 103?
Maybe? Wow.
I mean, man, if you get that lucky to live that long and work on your craft that long, what would you have to better the world around you? I think that's the true legacy of every human being. Is how you better the world around you. Who can you help? Not how much you have. Who can you help, particularly after you've gone? Because bringing all this back to John Coltrane, we still listen to his music. His albums still sell. His ideas are present in modern jazz, but they've also crossed over. His ideas are present in rock music now. His ideas are in church music. Matter of fact, I think there is a church in California where Coltrane is a saint.
Oh, really?
He has transcended space and time through his work. But I think the real legacy is his process, but also he still allows people to heal themselves by listening to him and getting filled with the spirit of God or the spirit of healing, or I'm in pain, I'm trying to process that. And that's still here almost 60 years after he has been gone from the earth.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
That's what I always love about that kind of person, because I believe there's too much competition, there's too much staring and not feeling good enough or privilege, I can't do it, I'll never make it. So the idea is to learn and have mentoring, invisibly online or whatever, but then also say there is something you are not, you don't have to be a wannabe, you don't have to think I'm not good enough because I got to be just like him. You hear who you are and use the best of all these types of things, to get the real you. That's what's really going to last.
Right.
And that's why we liked him. He probably fought being different so much. He probably knew it. You can feel it if people think you're different. But he was an experimenter. He got out there and he was unashamed, he did it. And God gave him, grace and favor with people. See, that's two. But anyway, well, thank you so much. We better close this out. But that was excellent. I just think. So this is Travis. He's been our guest today. He's done a heroic job. I thank you so much. Maybe we'll have him again. Just think of some more topics. I love the history of real music. I love the history And that is not my, saxophonist I love, but he's got, really hit it on the head. So thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
you. This is Tavo D'Arcy of Tavo Creative Leadership. God bless. If you want to comment, just write it crossbodyunity@gmail.com. God bless you.